Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Sunday on Fox, a great doubleheader starts with the Vikings taking on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Then Drew Brees leads the Saints against Nick Foles and the Bears or other regional action. It all kicks off at 1 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Terry Bradshaw is putting up $1 million for grabs again in this week's free-to-play Super 6 contest. All you have to do is correctly predict the outcome of 6 NFL games. Make sure you get your picks in before kickoff Sunday for your chance to be a millionaire and for top story scores and more. Go to the Fox Sports app. Colin, Steelers-Ravens is one of the matchups this week. Give us your winner and final score.
I stayed away from this. I initially loved Pittsburgh, but they just came off a really emotional game, and Baltimore's off a bye. I think I'm going to go Baltimore close. Baltimore 30-26.
So high scoring?
Yeah, kind of. Well, God, in the NFL, that's not even high scoring anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
Used to be. God, the whole league's crazy. I mean, it's seriously, you look at some of these defenses. Pittsburgh's defense, great. And Tennessee, what, had 27 kicking for 30. I mean, then that's a great defense in the NFL. It's just it's fun, though. It's a different world we live in right now. If you look at the way it works in the NFL, it's a different world.
It's that way in college, too.
Yeah. By the way, time to change your wireless provider. Go to puretalkusa.com. 2 gigs of data, all you need. Unlimited text, unlimited talk, 2 gigs of data. Dial #250 and say my name. Dial #250 and say my name. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Gardner Minshew is dealing with an injury to his throwing hands. He reportedly had multiple fractures and a strained ligament in his right thumb. The Jags have a bye this weekend, but his status for Week 9 against the Texans is uncertain. Mike Glennon is Jacksonville's backup quarterback if he is not back next week. They are 1-6. We are giving a lot of attention to the New York Jets and the Atlanta Falcons. And I think maybe because we were all so high on Gardner at the beginning of the season that we've forgotten that the Jags are also not good. And they could potentially be at the top of the draft at the end of the season. The rest of the schedule after the bye week is against the Texans. Then they're at the Packers, Steelers, Browns, at the Vikings, Titans, at Ravens, Bears, and at Colts.
I would say Jets, Jags will have the top two picks, and Jags is going to take a quarterback. We know that. They're going to take a quarterback. The question is, will the Jets, and they can either get a boatload of picks because somebody's going to trade up. It won't be the Giants, but it'll be like Washington will trade up. Listen, Washington could give them a good defensive – give me Ryan Kerrigan and your next 5 number one picks or something, and you keep Sam Darnold because the Jets need an edge rusher, Ryan Kerrigan. They're going to have tons of cap space and a bunch of picks.
And they have so many picks in this draft.
Yeah, the Jets could have more if they traded out of that spot and gave somebody else Trevor Lawrence.
Well, look, I mean, if you're Trevor Lawrence, the Jets very, very well may just win 2 games at the end of the season. Like, you never know. Again, players and coaches don't tank. Right. Only front offices do.
Yeah.
So they're still going to play as hard as they can. They're still putting tape out there. So that's just not how it works. And sometimes it just can flip at the end of the season, especially if they're up against people who are, you know, going into the playoffs. And, you know, if they say they sit someone, that can happen. So what do you do if you're Trevor Lawrence and the Jaguars end up with the first overall pick?
Well, you go there and no state tax and lose a bunch of games, and maybe they can turn things around. They have drafted some good players over the years. It's not like the Jags haven't had some decent drafts. They have.
I would personally feel more comfortable as Trevor Lawrence going to the New York Jets at this point. So the Patriots could be looking at a rebuild, especially if they fall to 2-5 on Sunday. According to Albert Breer, the Patriots have told other teams that they would listen to offers for almost anyone ahead of the trade deadline. The team has been quiet thus far, but could be swayed to part with some of its best players if things don't go as planned against the Bills this weekend.
Stephon
Gilmore's name has been out there. The Bills are...
Oh, they'll crush them. Bills will win.
Favored by 4.
I almost put this in the Blazing 5. I bailed off. You know, Philadelphia looks too easy, and Buffalo looks too easy. I stay away from that. I think they're like trap games. They look too easy. But I think Buffalo will roll them.
Well, odds provided by Fox Bet, I think that this is going to be a blowout.
Yeah.
This is really a must-win situation for the Patriots if they're even going to stay in the conversation, and for Cam Newton as well, because obviously Cam is putting together tape for next year for whatever they're going to do moving forward. Very quickly, the conversation has changed about if, you know, Cam is the future of the Patriots, and now into, you know, where will he end up next year around the league. I know the Patriots are up to something.
Yeah. Oh, of course
I'm
they
with
are.
You. This is not an accident.
Of course they are.
Like, Bill does not care. All this divorce talk. He's sitting back. This is what he's doing.
With a zillion dollars in cap space
he's just
next
like,
year.
Imagine this costume, but Bill Belichick's face. He is up to something. He has a master plan.
He has a master plan for dinner. He's got a master plan for everything.
This is definitely not an accident. Finally, the Nets announced that Mike D'Antoni has agreed to join the team's staff as an assistant coach. This reunites him with the new head coach, Steve Nash, who he coached, obviously, during two separate stints throughout Nash's career, most notably with the Phoenix Suns, where Nash won two league MVPs, and the team had four straight seasons with at least 50 wins. I like this move.
Yeah, Ty Lue got a head job when Ty Lue was an assistant. There's nothing wrong with being a coordinator in the NFL. We totally get it. What's wrong with Mike D'Antoni being an assistant for a couple of years, elevating his status? Everybody's going to go, oh, Kyrie, KD offenses. Then he gets another job. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, also, the Nets are in a good situation right now. He has two stars. All the responsibility is not on him, as it has been for the past couple years. Maybe he just wants a little break. Like, he probably could get another head coaching job or sit out for a year and wait for another position to open. This is a great situation. Again, I've been on this drumbeat all season long. KD's coming back. The NBA is going to look very, very different next year.
You're a little higher on that than I am.
I am very high on the Brooklyn Nets. I think they did an amazing job in the bubble with no one there. I'm not entirely sure how the Kyrie KD thing is going to work. And now they have Steve Nash. I know there was some talk with Kyrie and they don't need coaching. And I think that's exaggerated. But I think they're going to make problems for people in the East. And it could be a problem overall in the NBA.
There you go. Joy Taylor with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
The great Matthew McConaughey, the award-winning, Academy Award-winning actor. He won a Golden Globe, Emmy. He's going to be joining us, Texas Longhorn. He's their Minister of Culture for the Longhorn Basketball and Entertainment Facility, which is set to open next year. So, very interesting guy. You know his career, all the movies, The Wedding Planner, Wolf of Wall Street, Dallas Buyers Club, Interstellar, Contact, which is back in the 90s, is a great movie. It's a UFO movie you can buy. He's coming up next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Well, we feel very lucky from time to time. We get somebody special on the show. He doesn't see himself as that, but he's one of the great American actors.
Absolutely.
And he's got a new memoir called Green Lights, which I got about 4 or 5 days ago in the mail, and I opened it up. He kept a journal his whole life. I have a friend who did that. Trace Gallagher is my buddy at Fox News, and I've known Trace for 30 years, and he kept a journal and still does. And I've always been jealous of him.
I try to keep a journal, yeah, but you have to be very disciplined.
Well, of course you do, yes. And Trace is, and I'm not. And in some ways I am. You know, I eat right and I work out. Matthew McConaughey, Academy Award-winning actor, is now joining us live. And it's called Green Lights, by the way. So I will tell you right now, of all the things I'm jealous of, it's not the Academy Award and all that stuff. It's that you had the discipline to write a journal, and it's not a typical journal. It's not sad, although there's moments, so far of what I've seen, you talk about happiness. So, and it's not an advice book. This is not what it is. Give people a sense of what this memoir is about, because it took a lot of discipline, and I love the way you attacked it to write about it.
Well, it's a lot about attack. It's about approach, really, to life. My personal approaches that I think everybody can understand in their own lives. You know, green lights. We love green lights in life. They say yes. They're freedom. They affirm our way. They say go, attaboy, more, please, continue. We don't like yellow and red lights in life. They slow us down or make us stop. And though we don't like red and yellow lights, I've found that a lot of my red and yellow lights in life, those hardships and crises, actually gave me what I needed, or later on revealed their green light assets of lessons I learned from those hard times. So, you know, we can engineer our own green lights in life by choices we make today through responsibility and accountability and delayed gratification. Also, sometimes green lights just land in our lap with good fortune. So what do we do with them when they do? And then other times, it's just about perspective. I can look at a situation differently than you. I may see it as a red light. You may see it as a green light. It's how do we see it? Sometimes a red light crisis doesn't exist if we just don't even give the damn thing credit. So eventually in the rearview mirror, I do believe that all red and yellow lights do turn green. It's an approach book.
You know, it's interesting because in Hollywood, you are rare. You are not cynical. You don't lean all the way left. You're kind of relatable. You love your sports. Your dad was drafted by the Packers. You're kind of a regular guy. In fact, I had years ago, I had a friend that got on a Delta flight with you flying to you were flying to Austin. He goes, "You won't believe who was on my flight tonight." I said, "Who?" He sat next to me, Matthew McConaughey. And I said, "Really?" He said, "Oh, he's just talkative, nice guy. He didn't try to hide. It was a late night flight." Right. And that, by the way, and he spoke very highly of you. And it is interesting. You mentioned recently that you feel sometimes you get pushback, and it's funny because you've really embraced who you are, your sports, your love for Texas, and that sometimes you feel like an outsider, but yet you're very much an insider. And as I'm kind of rambling here, have you ever sensed that a little bit? You're in the club, but kind of out of the club.
Yeah, maybe somewhat. But you know what? Every time I feel like I'm out of the club, I got to be honest with you, Colin. Every time I feel like maybe I'm a little bit out of the club, when I go back there, that community and my peers embrace me wholeheartedly. I mean, the one great thing about Hollywood is that you can go out there and be whoever you want to be. The really tough thing about Hollywood is you can go out there and be whoever the hell you want to be. And too many options can make tyrants of anybody. But that whole industry has overall been great to me. And you know, I have a lot of good friends out there. I've met some of the most creative and extraordinary people in my life out there. Now that comes with, you know, some people that have extremely views on to one side or the other that do not agree. I think what I said the other day that you were alluding to when I've talked about my faith, I've seen people, everyone's just out there. There's a game to play. There's a game in Hollywood. Do we do our business in the Hollywood game? I've tried to do my business in the Hollywood game. I've also tried to play my own game in the business of Hollywood. But overall, that industry has been very kind and embracing of me, even though, you know, I know not everyone agrees with some of the things that I believe in. I've kept a pretty doggone good relationship with them, and they have with me.
Yeah. You know, we were talking about this, the movies you've done. I loved Contact with Jodie Foster. Loved it. Oh, God, I loved it. And I have seen a UFO, although I still don't believe in them, but I saw one. Not going to get into it. You know, whatever.
What? Another show? Okay.
Grayland Washington, I've talked about it ad nauseum. Okay, Wedding Planner, Lincoln Lawyer. You love Lincoln Lawyer, by the way. Dallas Buyers Club, Wolf of Wall Street, Interstellar, which is my daughter's favorite movie. But here's what's interesting. So it's very easy now as an actor to do Netflix and Amazon Prime. It's very easy now because it's lucrative and it's very good. But you had just won the Academy Award 6-7 years ago. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to go do True Detective. It wasn't as fashionable then. It was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Movie stars don't do that. No. That's what you do. Did your agent...
They don't go to the small screen.
That's right. And I thought, did your agent go, hey, Matthew, I want you to take the weekend off. Go fly fishing, come back, think about it. Because people 7 years ago, Matthew, they were not doing that.
No, they weren't. You bring up a really good point. So at that time, look, I was rolling. I was doing creative work back to back to back, and I was ferocious about it. And I was consistent. I was choosing character and story. F the bucks. I don't care. I'm going for the experience. I want to choose a role that's going to make me sweat in my boots in a story that I'm like, can't wait to turn the page. And that's what Rustin Cole and True Detective offered. So I remember considering exactly what you said. Now, wait a minute. No one's, you know, I love the script. My agent loved the script. But we said, this is moving to the small screen. And you're succeeding on the big screen at the highest level. That's not what actors do. You're exactly right. But I remember saying, well, the story's there. The character's there. I don't give a damn what screen it's on. And my agent, we talked about it for about 8 seconds. So there was no weekend of fly fishing. I needed no reset. He agreed. I agreed. We plowed forward. And, you know, that show that we did that Nick Pizzolatto created, Cary Fukunaga directed, myself and Woody did, It was part of the beginning of the avalanche of so many actors now going to the small screen, right. And how you actually find your best dramas, arguably, on the small screen in limited series now.
The other thing that's fascinating, Matthew McConaughey is joining us, is Dallas Buyers Club is a remarkable performance. It's an absolutely incredible movie. I mean, it's one of those where you're watching it and you're like, oh, he's going to win the Oscar for this. But it's funny. I've seen De Niro put on weight. I've seen Christian Bale put on weight. And you're a guy that takes care of your body and your mind, your soul. That's who you are, okay?
Yep.
And then you made a decision. Yeah, I'm going to lose like 60 pounds and be totally unhealthy. And I thought to myself, you know, everybody just thinks, oh, it's a role, you do it. But you're not your typical actor. And I remember watching that thinking, oh, that's going to take him 2 years to get back to where he was. You can't just eat cheeseburgers and put 50 pounds on. That's totally unhealthy.
No.
So,
yeah, no, you can't.
So when you made that decision, that was not just an emotional decision. It was a physical decision you made. Did you have some, before you made it, did you sit down and think, man, this is going to take 3 years of my life. I'm going to have to change 3 years of my life to do this movie.
No, all I initially thought was, hey, how can I lose all this weight in the most healthy fashion? Meaning, instead of trying to do it in 6 weeks, I gave myself 5 months. And I got on a diet where I was losing 2.5 pounds a week like clockwork. Forget the exercise. 2.5 pounds a week like clockwork. Got down to 134.
Oh, Lord.
Now, it was only after that I considered the way back. And I remember hearing stories and talking to a couple of doctors saying, you can't just go out and start eating your cheeseburgers and rush back because you will grow back and put on the weight in a more of a deformed way. You have to really walk the dog here. So it did take. Now, mind you, I came out of that. I hung at about 165, which was a great sort of younger sort of light fighting weight for me, and I felt really good. Then I slowly moved up to the 175 to 180. And then after that, just as I got back to my fighting weight, which is 188, I went and did this film called Gold where I got up to 221, which was a hell of a lot more fun than losing all the weight, I tell you. But maybe that's the one I haven't quite recovered from because I got these little things back here on the back right and the back left of me that kind of can hold a little water if I'm leaning back a little bit, you know?
Yeah, no, I get it. It's much easier to bang out cheeseburgers and milkshakes. That's the easy stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
Hanging out with your kids doing that stuff. Matthew McConaughey is joining us. So you have an interesting saying, and you have said, years ago, I thought about writing a screenplay, and I read a book called Save the Cat by Blake Snyder. And he says, name the film before you start writing it. Because everybody that writes a film has a great open and a great close. But those story arcs in the middle, you're going to get lost. So go back to the name of it is. You have an idea. You say, I want to see the movie poster.
Yes.
So explain your thinking on that.
Here we go. And it's a lot of the theme through this book.
Okay.
I have, you know, sometimes, and I've been decent at it at times in my life. You go off the cliff and you figure out how to fly on the way down. Not me. I like to be, I call it conservative, early, liberal, late. And those are not political terms. What I mean by, what are the rules? Where are we going? What's our direction? Let's pick our general direction we're going. Let's write the headline first, then write our story to get to it. Before a film, I'll sit down with the producers and directors and go, what's the poster look like? Well, if I'm the lead and it's a silhouette of my face taking up the whole poster, I'm like, oh, this is going to be like a really character-driven. The director's going to, he wants a character-driven story here. Well, if it's a big wide shot and there's me and an army of silhouettes coming up over the mountain, well, this is going to be more of an epic story-driven picture. But what is that poster? Just to give us a little bit of a North Star to head to. Now, you write that headline. You put that goal in front of you in life and you say, this is where I see myself. Then you write the story to get there. Then you make the movie to get there. The poster changes. The headline changes, but it's usually similar in the similar vernacular to what you were aiming at. And that's what I mean by I want to see the poster first. I want to write the headline first sometimes and then write the story to get to the headline. And it gives me a magic marker out there, a North Star where we can all agree this is the album we're making. Meaning like if you and I go to play music, well, we need to at least say, are we making a rock album here, a jazz album, or a country album? You know what I mean? Let's have an idea.
Yeah. Matthew McConaughey, the memoir is called Green Lights. I just started a couple of nights ago. Many of you may not know. You know of his work, obviously. I just named many of the great movies. His dad, Jim McConaughey, was drafted by the Green Bay Packers in the 1953 NFL draft. And I think both of you, you have an appreciation for soccer, which I do. I tried to buy into an MLS team 10 years ago, and I couldn't afford it. You have bought into the Austin team, which is fantastic. Again, there's another thing I'm jealous of. You kept a journal and you bought a soccer team. Austin FC, which, by the way, I think the MLS is a growing, fledgling league. I know owners in it. It's a fantastic, I think they do a tremendous sport, tremendous job. But I want to ask you, you have athletics in your family. And when you take on roles, you can clearly be physical. Has sports, I'm sure it's helped you in your career. But is thinking like an actor and an athlete, has it ever hindered you? Have you ever thought to yourself, I wish I wasn't such a jock. I wasn't such an athlete.
No. I've tried to play, use different parts of my athletic ability. I'll say this. I think about athletics all the time in the work that I do. Meaning, preparation. I will out-prepare people. I will out-prepare my competition and have many times. That's where the work comes in. You know this. You did your work before this show. You're not working right now. We're playing. When you're live, when you're in the game, you can play only if you've done the work. So you learn the heady stuff is early. It's like if a team gets a new defensive coordinator. And they're probably not going to be that good if the defense is that complicated the next year because they're thinking about it on the field. And if you got to think about it, you're a half a step slow and that receiver gets by you, touchdown.
Right.
I don't want to be thinking on the day. I want to be working through my instincts. So I do all my work pregame so I can show up and say, I've got four versions of the truth in this scene. I can call an audible on the go. Don't even yell, cut. We're live. Let's go. Throw at me whatever you want. I'm in the game. I read the context. I know the time on the clock. I know what scene I'm in. I know where I am in this story. I know where I came from. I know where I'm going. Give me whatever you got. Let's play. Press record.
You are currently the, and will be, the Minister of Culture for the Longhorns Basketball and Entertainment Facility. You're a huge Longhorn fan. I saw you on the sidelines years ago. Didn't want to bother you. USC, Texas, which remains the greatest football game I have ever seen live in my life.
Me too.
Best game I've ever seen.
One of the best dramatic events ever on planet Earth. Hollywood could not have written that script.
So I went to that game, and I said, I want a ticket. I don't want to sit in the press box. So I said, I want a ticket to the game. And I'm kind of a USC honk out here, but I always liked Texas. I was right in the middle of Texas fans. And I've said this before on the air. It was the coolest group of people. They knew they were at Ollie Frazier. Everybody sitting at that game knew, okay, this is last. I've never been to a game where Texas is like, oh, you're the last team we wanted to play. And the USC behind me is like, I don't want to face Vince Young. This is no good. And so you were a Texas fan before that, but can Texas get back there? Why can't Texas get back? Why are they not there yet?
Why are we not there yet? This is a great question. We could do a whole show on this. Look, it's many different components. I mean, look, everyone goes through cycles, and we're going through a cycle of rebuilding right now. What Tom's come in and a lot of what he has done that we need to continue to do is this alignment of what we expect. And look, you come to Texas, you know what's expected. It's you compete for championships. That's the excellence. That's the bar. You are handed the keys to the Ferrari. Here you go. Drive it. And the players and coaches need to understand that when you get there, that's the expectation. Now, you're going to win a championship every year? Hell no, you're not. A lot of things go into a season. Balls have to bounce your way, et cetera. What do we got to get back? I think we have to, and this is not just a particular problem in Texas, but I do think it is particular to Texas. We got to quit playing in the third person. We have so much media on us. We look at our proverbial jumbotron because with social media today of who are we, what do we think we are, what's expected, oh, we won, what's the pressure when we lose? No, forget it. We need to throw all that out and say, F all of that. Put it down. Let's put our head down, do the work, stick to the process. Look up and be objective about what we're doing when the season's over. And if we put our head down in the process and quit thinking about, hey, how are we perceived, I think we get more wins. I think we're back to that place. Now that you have to have the right people in place to do that, I understand that. But we have the personnel. We can get the personnel. We have the players, and we can get the players. I think in Texas, part of it is we need to understand, hey, you are under the microscope here more than anywhere else in the nation. Now, do we look at that and go, oh, geez, or do we go, exactly, that's why I'm here. Now let's go. You press record, world. Watch us go. We'll look up when the season's over, and I bet you we got a whole lot more W's.
By the way, of all the stuff you've done, green lights, you write a memoir, and it's very personal because it's your journal. Was there any point, because this is why I'm jealous of you, because I cry a lot. Kids, you know, just stuff. I'm a dad. Did it take you back to places? Sometimes I look at my phone because I want to cry. I want to go look at my kids when they were five. Did it take you back to places and you were like, oh my God, I totally forgot him. And it took you to these wonderfully emotional places.
You know, I tell a lot of my dad's a central character in this. And, you know, the book is actually to, it's in the beginning, it says this book is to the only thing I ever knew I wanted to be and family. And the only thing I ever knew I wanted to be was a father. And a lot of it's based on because of who my dad was to me. You know, my father moved on in 93, and I've done a decent job of keeping his spirit alive in me and continuing conversations with him through my life and trying to share things with him spiritually. But I went back and retold some of the early stories and looked at the diaries of things I was writing as a kid when he was still alive and some times we had. And so going in and remembering some of the details of the way he loved me, the way he loved my mother, the way he loved our family, the values that he tried instilled in us, the way where sometimes where I maybe thought it was unfair, but in retrospect looked at it and go, oh no, he was really trying. You go back, you know, and we lose a loved one, our father, and you see that there's a gap between the message and the messenger.
Right.
And you go, and I remember being angry about that gap and going, wait a minute, you didn't really do that, but that's what you taught me. And then I noticed through the diaries that, oh, then I forgave him for that. And then I also said, well, just because maybe the messenger didn't act out on the messages he was giving you, Matthew, doesn't mean that the message wasn't good. So you can still double down that he wanted you to be a little bit better, a little more evolved, a little bit better of a man, and maybe even a better father. So when I went back in those places, I shed quite a few tears seeing my dad, how he loved me, my brothers, our family, and his wife, my mother, and saw how it was hard sometimes and saw where maybe he didn't live up to what he was teaching, but he damn sure meant it. And I appreciate it in a different way when I went back and looked at it.
By the way, I have to ask you about this because my daughter Olivia watched Interstellar about a month ago, and she told me it's the best movie she's ever seen. And I said, Olivia, it's very complicated. And during the break,
yes,
before I had you on, I told you. And what did you say about how complicated it was?
I said, here, I'm going to give you my number. Olivia, call me so you can explain it to me.
It is a very complex movie. She literally talked to me. She called me four times about it. She said, Dad, you just can't believe this thing. It's so great. And I'm like, okay, I'll get to it. I've watched like seven of his movies. Just give me time on Interstellar. Matthew, it's been an absolute pleasure. The memoir is called Green Lights. I hope to see you at a Texas football game because I love the program. I love what it stands for. And I'm really rooting for Tom Herman. You're a busy, busy man. Put that book up one more time. Matthew, thank you so much for coming on our show today.
Colin, thank you. Look forward to seeing you next time in person. Hook them this Saturday. Let's go get them.
All Longhorn games are big games. Great stuff. Thanks, man.
Oh, no.
Good stuff. That was fun.
Tremendous. I'm going to get the book now.
Yeah, I just think it takes, when I read it, I thought, God, he just gets, I do this with my phone. I probably about once, twice a month, I'll just go to my phone, and it just takes me to places with my late mom, and it takes me to places with my kids, and I'm like, it makes me happy. I'm like, oh my God, we had so much fun that day.
And I think a lot of people have done that, especially in 2020.
You used to just have one picture of your grandpa. You know, like now you got like 1,400. I have to, you know, delete some. my iCloud, I've got to shrink it. So, I mean, we just live in a different time now. But I think when you keep a journal, I've always been a little jealous of that. I'm like, boy, you get to go back and really re-experience some amazing times. And you know what? It's my theory on this in life. It's never as bad as you thought, and it's never as good as you thought. That most of life is is a 5.5 or a 4.5, maybe a 6.5 and a 5. It's not a lot of 10s, not a lot of 1s. Obviously, there are some.
Well, we romanticize the past a lot.
Oh, kind of? A little?
A little bit. A little bit. Especially in sports.
But well, people, yeah, people say it all the time. Oh, I remember the good old days. And I'm like, you do remember you used to get like 2 NFL games on television. I go home on Sundays now. I got the Red Zone channel. I got the Fox game. I got the CB. I can just watch every single game.
Well, I think it's because, you know, when you're younger, everything seems bigger and you're attached to it. And it's like memories. And you're right. You don't remember everything else that was happening around it. You like the house I grew up in, I thought was massive. I go back now. It's not. It was
exactly.
Not massive. It was not a big
Isn't
house
that crazy?
At all. But yeah, because you're little. So like everything seems
As a kid, I went
different.
To the Dalles, Oregon. My dad's brother, both optometrists, and we used to go to his office, and I'd play with the glasses, and we'd go up to his house. And I have memory after memory after memory of being in the backyard of their house. I went to it about 10 years ago. It's about as big as this screen in front of me. And I think it made me kind of sad. I'm like, I thought I had such a great childhood.
You did, because you don't need a lot.
I was playing a little
That's
tiny...
why when you get the kids everything for Christmas, they play with the box.
God, you're right. No more presents for the kids. Michelin Endurance XD silicone wiper blades, real world proven. Extreme weather performance lasts 2 times longer than other blades. Get them only at Walmart. Hey, be safe tomorrow. Tomorrow is Halloween.
Yes, be safe. Be responsible.
Be responsible. Be safe out there. Wear some level of masking, whatever it is. SFY is coming up next.